Member Week is here at Lowe's. That means it's time for My Lowe's Rewards members to save big with up to 40% off hundreds of items like appliances, tools, home essentials, and more. Plus, get free standard shipping. Shop these exclusive member-only savings now through October 15th. Not a rewards member? Join for free today. Free standard shipping not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
They called him a clown. They called him a contractor. He called himself a businessman. But under the floorboards of the modest, unremarkable house on West Somerdale Avenue, John Wayne Gacy was something else entirely. Something calculated, something cold. Something no one wanted to believe could exist in plain sight. Not in their neighborhood. There ain't no killer clown around these parts, you fool. Not in their community. Not behind that bright white smile. Because Gacy, he didn't come waving a weapon. He came dressed in khakis and a smile, asking if you wanted a job, shaking hands at parades, hosting block parties with the mayor, painting his face like Pogo the Clown, and handing out balloons to kids at hospitals. He was a guy who showed up when you needed drywall patched and wouldn't even overcharge you. But underneath the costume and the concrete and the charm was a man who buried boys in the dirt while the world looked the other way. John Wayne Gacy is who we are talking about. Devil in Disguise is the new drama series on Peacock. Highly suggest checking it out. You can even get a little preview of it here on our channel. Had a chance to talk with the showrunner and one of the stars, the man who plays John Wayne Gacy as well. All you got to do is find that conversation on our YouTube channel or wherever you download podcasts. It's right here in the last couple of days. We talk with the creators of the show and the star, and Bob Motta is on with us. Bob's father was actually one of Gacy's attorneys. It's an interesting conversation. I highly do suggest checking it out. But this is about who John was. The lore, the story versus reality. I'm curious to get your thoughts in the comments section. And there is so much to the story of Gacy. There's no way we're going to be able to cover all of it right here in the next 10, 15 minutes. We're just not. So don't be, well, he did this. Yeah, we know. He did a lot of stuff. We're going to try and go for the greatest hits in this segment. So if you're new to Gacy and you want to watch the doc, you're like, I want some backstory. That's the purpose of this. And the doc, there is a doc. Don't want you to get confused. Devil in Disguise. There is a doc called Devil in Disguise, and there is a movie or a series called Devil in Disguise. Two different things. One's based on the other. Just so you know, you can do the doc variation or the drama or both. The drama is the new one, by the way. John Wayne Gacy was born in 1942, raised in a working-class Chicago household under a father who drank too much and loved too little. The beatings were frequent. The emotional bruising was worse. He was mocked for being soft, called names no kid should hear, and so often happens, what wasn't processed turned into something weaponized. Gacy grew up into a man who never forgot what it felt like to be powerless. I made damn sure he'd never feel that way again. By the late 1960s, Gacy was married with kids, living in Iowa, managing a string of fast food restaurants. On the surface, it was a respectable life. Underneath, it was already unraveling. In 1968, he was convicted of sexually assaulting a teenage boy. He pled guilty. A prison psychiatrist warned he was deeply disturbed, high-risk offender. The phrase used was incurable S-sadist. But Gacy played the model inmate, made all the right noises in therapy, and was paroled after just 18 months. That parole board never looked back. It was the 60s, right? That sort of stuff doesn't exist. Of course, I'm being satirical. He returned to Chicago in 1970 and wasted no time reinventing himself. He moved in with his mother, started a small construction business, PDM Contractors, specializes in home remodeling, and hired mostly teenage boys. Said they were cheap labor, eager to work. And at that point in time, no one thought to question it, because that is who was doing that sort of work at that time in this country. They weren't playing video games and living in their parents' basements. Well, somewhere, but not to the level we see today. He remarried, volunteered in the community, became a fixture in local politics. Photos surfaced of him posing with political candidates. One image even showed him shaking hands with the First Lady. No one asked what was under his house. Why would you? Because by then there was a lot under his house. No one knew about it, though. In 1972, Gacy claimed his first known victim, a young man who was never publicly identified, murdered after a night out and buried in the crawl space. And then it continued again and again and again. His victims were boys and young men, some as young as 14. Some ran away from home. Some were offered jobs. Others were just in the wrong place at the wrong time. He invited them back to his house, told them he had work. Some of them never got past the front room. Gacy's method wasn't improvisational. He had a routine. He called it the handcuff trick. He'd convince his victim to try on a pair. Hey, got these here. Sometimes pretending it was part of a magic act. And once those cuffs clicked shut, the game changed. He called the next part the rope trick. The details are intentionally omitted here, not to sanitize what happened, but because the full truth doesn't need to be spelled out to understand its depravity. And we'd like you to be able to see this on YouTube, because the YouTube gods don't like things like that. So unfortunately, there's that. These were not moments of rage. These were acts of control, of deliberate cruelty, one after another, always when he was gone, always with planning, and always with a place to put the body. The crawl space became a graveyard. For years, neighbors complained of a foul stench from under his house. Gacy blamed moisture. He blamed sewage. He even poured lime down there to cover the smell. And somehow that was enough. Somehow no one questioned the odd hours, the parade of missing boys who were last seen speaking to him, the employees who vanished mid-job. Maybe it was because Gacy knew how to disarm suspicion. Maybe it was because the boys he targeted were easy to dismiss. Runaways, street kids. Kids whose parents didn't have the power or the voice to demand action. And maybe that's exactly why he chose them. As most predators do. In July of 1975, a teenager named John Butchevich disappeared after arguing with Gacy over back pay. His parents begged police to investigate. They knew something was wrong, but there was no evidence, no body, no search warrant. And Gacy, he invited him over for coffee, sat with him, smiled, promised to help find their son. Because at that point in time, are you really thinking the guy who's inviting you in for coffee in his own house has your son's body in his crawl space? In March of 1977, a young man named Jeffrey Ringnall survived Gacy, barely. He went to police, told them he'd been kidnapped, drugged, and assaulted. He identified Gacy's car, Gacy's house. Still, nothing happened. Gacy had political connections. He was polite when questioned. And the case went nowhere. And he kept going. At one point, the crawl space became too full. He began dumping the last few victims into the Des Plaines River. By then, the number of murders had reached into the dozens. The exact count, Gacy himself once said, only God knows. The end began with one boy who didn't get ignored. December 11th, 1978, Robert Pice, 15 years old, smart, grounded, not the kind of kid police wrote off. He vanished after work after telling his mother he was going to talk to a contractor about a job. That contractor was Gacy. Police searched his house. They found strange things, a class ring that didn't belong to them, clothing in the wrong sizes, the unmistakable smell of death, and a receipt, one that placed Peist in Gacy's orbit. The surveillance team moved in. Gacy, feeling the pressure, began unraveling. He drank, and he talked too much, and he confessed to his lawyer. He said he'd killed maybe 30. He said he'd been the judge, jury, and executioner. And then he tried to disappear into the night. Police picked him up the same day. At second search of his house, they didn't need dogs to find the first body. They just needed a shovel. The crawl space gave up its dead, one by one. 26 bodies buried below. Three more in the yard, four in the river. 33 boys, 33 families. Decades later, some of those victims still remain unnamed. Gacy was charged with 33 counts of murder. His trial began in February of 1980. The defense argued insanity, claimed he had multiple personalities, that he wasn't in control. But the prosecution made it clear this wasn't madness. It was strategy, planning, calculated violence, followed by cover-up and denial. He lured victims. He buried them. He lied about it for years. That's not delusion. That's design. Psychiatrists testified he wasn't psychotic. He was a textbook case of antisocial personality disorder. No remorse, no empathy, no conscience. His only regret was, well, getting caught. One moment during the trial defined everything. Prosecutor William Knuckles stood before the jury holding up photographs of the victims. One by one, he dropped them into a model of Gacy's crawl space that had been built for court. One picture, one drop, one name, over and over, as if to say, this is where they ended up. This is what he did. And this is why you're here. The jury didn't need long. Guilty on all counts. Death sentence handed down. Gacy would spend the next 14 years on death row. And even then, he never stopped performing. He painted portraits of himself as Pogo the Clown and sold them. He ran a phone line where people could hear him talk about the case for a fee. He called reporters, insisted he was framed, said others were involved, claimed he didn't kill anyone, that he was just the guy who buried the bodies. I should have only been charged, he once said, with running a cemetery without a license. That was John Wayne Gacy, right to the end. On May 10th of 1994, he was executed by lethal injection. His last meal was fried chicken, shrimp fries, and strawberries. And if you're a child, you may remember the Happy Meal McDonald's put out in 1994, the John Wayne Gacy Happy Meal with collectible clown figures that you could get. The Happy Meal box, the theme was that of a crawl space. Okay, I completely made that up. That would be an interesting creation for AI, though. Witnesses say his last words were, kiss my ass. It was an exit only he would think was clever. Outside, hundreds gathered. Some cheered, some sang, others stood in silence. And then the house on Summerdale was bulldozed, gone, just like him. But the story, can't get rid of that. That's never gone. Because the thing about John Wayne Gacy is that the monster wasn't the makeup. It wasn't the rope. It wasn't the crawl space. It was the lie. The lie that evil announces itself. The lie that monsters are obvious. Gacy wasn't hiding in shadows. He was smiling in the daylight, hosting parties, handing out balloons, helping people move furniture. And all the while, the bodies piled up. He wasn't the clown. That's too easy. He was a man next door who made you feel safe while the floorboards creaked under your feet. And that's why we remember. That's why we still talk about Gacy today. Because we all have people in our lives that are nice, that are kind, and that's, you know, that's where it usually ends. They're nice and kind because they're good human beings. What about the ones who aren't? And how do you know who they are? That's what Gacy makes us wonder. Let me know your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube. If you're not there, just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. That's where you will find us and many, 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 many more stories about true crime. We give you tons of them every single day. So please do subscribe and check that out. And be sure to press subscribe wherever you're listening to this. If you're listening to the podcast version, wherever that is, hit subscribe so you don't miss any of our coverage. Until next time, my name's Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
At McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.